it's not as deep as some other Cardinal systems, but you look at the young talent they have in the majors, the other young talented players they've traded to get impact players, you know, getting Paul Goldschmidt, getting Marcell Ozuna. And the fact there is a lot of talent in the upper levels, you still feel good about where the Cardinals are. You know, again, they reached the NLCS last year. They have a good major league team. There's impact talent, you know, on the horizon. They're in a good place. They have time to backfill that system a little bit at the lower levels. I wouldn't panic about it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould. And as a bonus this week, I wanted to bring BPIB listeners a conversation that happened for a series of stories that ran over the previous 8 days in the pages of the Post-Dispatch and online at stltoday.com. The idea, inspired by a suggestion from the Sklar brothers, Jason and Randy, was to identify the Cardinals' future, for now, at every position. That's catcher to closer, starter to shortstop, from all over the outfield to all over the infield. To help dive into the prospect pool and better understand its depth, I went to the expert, Kyle Glazer, national writer for Baseball America. He does the scouting reports and rankings for the Cardinals' top 30 in Baseball America's Essential Prospect Handbook. Nobody talks to more scouts and dives deeper into the rosters throughout the Cardinals organization than Kyle. Over the course of 8 videos, condensed here into one conversation, but all of those videos available at stltoday.com, we discuss the players the Cardinals have on the brink, on the distant horizon, and the holes that have to be filled, some of them in the near future. Let me first tell you about our sponsor, Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Imagine your home totally organized. Closet by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% plus an additional 15% off. Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. That's Closets by Design of St. Louis, 314-733-9855. The official sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. Now here's my conversation about the future lineup of the Cardinals with Baseball America's national writer, Kyle Glazer.
As we worked on this future project, thought it would be a good idea to get someone who knows the system as well as anyone because he spent so much time researching it, reporting it, to rank it. Kyle, welcome. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Derek. Happy to join you anytime.
In the first part of this series, we talked about the outfield and the future that the Cardinals have on the horizon for the outfield. First and foremost is the guy everybody knows really well, Dylan Carlson. Where, for you, does he fit as far as his position and sort of in the minor league system as far as a polished hitter? Not just in the Cardinal system, but throughout the minors.
He's one of the most polished hitters in all the minors. We have him as the number 10 prospect overall up at our BA Top 100, and a lot of that's because of his bat, but he's also a really good defender. He has the ability to play all three outfield positions. The sense is he'd be an above average to potentially, you know, plus, you know, gold glove caliber, even guy in the corners, left or right. And he can play center as well and do fine for you out there. I think ultimately the expectation is he settles into left just because he's best in a corner and his arm is probably better suited to left field than right. But what makes him so talented is you can put him in all three spots and feel okay about it.
We actually put him in right field in this lineup that we're putting together in this 8-part series, just in the thought because of how he could profile there as an above average fielder with a true arm. And in left field, put probably the better arm in John Torres. Young guy, not, you know, probably not a name on the tip of everybody's tongue, except for they know him from the Mercado trade. What can you tell us about the other corner outfield, John Torres?
Yeah, so he has really the biggest arm in the Cardinals system. It's a howitzer. He's still young, still needs to learn to corral it a little bit and keep it online, but has the potential to be one of those jaw-dropping arms you see. And in terms of as a hitter, he's a big guy who's still getting stronger, and you can really dream on him hitting for average and power, but he's very, very young. He spent last year mostly in rookie ball at Johnson City. He began the year in Peoria. They realized it was a little bit too fast to push him because he was just so young. They dropped him back down, and he was much better at that level. So he's still a couple of years away. It's still a very young kid, and there's a long development path, but you know, you can kind of envision him growing into this big physical power hitting, you know, left-handed hitter you can stick in the middle of your lineup and throw out some guys at the plate for you if all goes well. Still has to work on his approach a little bit, his consistency of his pitch selection, and that is the difference a lot of times between guys who reach the majors and guys who top out in Double-A. So again, there's a lot of variance here, but there's a lot to like and dream on.
What do you make of that trade, or how do you think that'll be looked at in hindsight? Obviously, Mercado a guy who has a willingness to steal, has grown into the position in center field after starting his career as a shortstop with the Cardinals, is moved in large part because of 40-man considerations, and, you know, then becomes a starter for Cleveland. Yet, you know, down the way, there's Connor Capel, who came in that trade, and then, of course, Torres.
Yeah, I mean, obviously losing Oscar Mercado hurts, especially when you look at the Cardinals and Harrison Bader not hitting as well last year, having to go down to AAA at one point. Having that true center fielder like Mercado would have been very beneficial. But one thing the Cardinals do well is they have such a depth of talent. They're able to, you know, quote-unquote lose trades and still come out okay. I mean, they've traded a lot of good players recently. You look at Luke Voit, you look at Tommy Pham, you look at Oscar Mercado. You know, all those trades, the guy they traded was more of an impact player than the guys they've gotten back so far, but they still won the division and went to the NLCS last year just because they have just a really, really good player development system. So losing Oscar Mercado hurts. It is very possible that, you know, again, John Torres doesn't work out and he, you know, becomes kind of an L in the trade wins and loss column for the Cardinals, but they should still be okay just because they have this great player development system and they do a really good job at producing homegrown players.
You mentioned Harrison Bader, Dylan Carlson, both guys who can play center field. Harrison Bader has the run of it right now. Lane Thomas is also in the organization. Way, way, way in the distance is their pick, draft pick from last year, Trey Fletcher, who a lot of people expected to be the top prep player available in this summer's draft. What do you know about him? He's just described over and over again as super toolsy, super athletic, and super raw, and relatively new as far as experience to baseball.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind that Trey Fletcher reclassified, as you mentioned, to this year's draft, last year's draft. So he was essentially a high school junior going out and playing professional competition in Johnson City last year. And on top of that, he's from Maine. He did not see consistent, you know, 90-plus mile-an-hour velocity for his entire high school career. He'd see it on a showcase, you know, at a showcase event for 4 days at a time, but he was primarily facing, you know, 80-mile-an-hour pitchers. So there's a lot of adjustment here to come physically, just dealing with the level of competition. He's going to be a long-term project. He's an elite athlete. A lot of scouts remember him for the backflips he would do on the field at the area code games. He can really play center field, but again, the instincts need to improve. The reads and roots need to improve. It's just raw speed right now where you can dream on. The more reps he gets, he becomes a weapon out there. I would say that the Cardinals, because they have Lane Thomas, because they have Harrison Bader, Tyler O'Neill can even stand out in center if you need him to, and then Dylan Carlson as well if they have to put him out there. They can afford to let Trey Fletcher take as long as he needs to develop, and that's a good thing because as talented as he is, again, Northeast, super young, really has a long way to go just in terms of reads and roots and reps and every aspect of his game. It might be a 5, 6, even 7 year type of development curve here. It'll be a while. But there's potentially a nice payoff at the end if everything comes together.
What's on the horizon for at the catcher position is interesting because the Cardinals have yet to decide what to do with Yadier Molina. He wants to play 2 more years. They want to discuss extension. All of that has been put on pause, just like the season. Cardinals have Andrew Kisner on the way. He's major league ready by a lot of measures. And then, not too far down the road, is Ivan Herrera, a 19-year-old right now, he's about to turn 20 in June, at catcher, who, Kyle, really stands out for, you know, just his savvy and, of course, his bat.
Yeah, he's hit every level he's been sent to from the time he signed. He went out to the Dominican Summer League as one of the youngest players in the league and had one of the best averages in the league, and then they've really have pushed him aggressively since then, and he's responded to every challenge. I mean, for a kid his age, a catcher his age, to go out to and hit like he did in the Midwest League, low class A, and with Jupiter in the Florida State League, a very, very pitcher-friendly park in high class A, was really, really remarkable.
What do you see from him or hear about him defensively?
That he has all the tools to catch, but like a lot of young catchers, there's still just work to come. That should come, again, with just time and reps. Physically, he looks the part. Mentally, he's got the maturity. He's got the mindset. He's got the desire to catch. There's just some things to shore up. He has arm strength, but his arm stroke can get a little long, so they need to shorten that up a little bit. Some of the things with blocking, you know, there's just some things to improve there, controlling his blocks, and receiving you can always improve. So it's one of those situations where catching is just so, so, so much about skill refinement and reps as much as, and really more than any other position. And that should just come with time. But compared to the peers his age, he's advanced. And that's where you say, okay, you know, give it two more years of catching, you know, development in AA and AAA, and he's going to look really good and still be only 21, 22.
Yeah, there used to be kind of that magic number, right? Like this many plate appearances, this many innings for a player at this level. Some of that has been fast forwarded in the current game because they let talent rise. What's different about a catcher's development, especially a young catcher's development, versus some other position players? Is it, do you just have to be more patient, or do you have to let the glove catch up with the bat?
You really just have to be more patient. It's partially because the defensive requirements, you know, physically just the demands of the position, on top of now the mental demands, you know, the amount of information catchers are fed, how they have to, you know, get that to the pitchers and manage the entire staff. A lot of times the focus on defense means the bat will slow down, and it just takes, you know, a lot of patience to let everything kind of grow and develop together. So far, Herrera's been able to hit. He hasn't had any issues with that. We see catchers a lot of times once they hit AA and the stuff they're dealing with starts getting nastier and the physical demands start becoming larger. That's sometimes where you'll see the bat stall a little bit, but it eventually will catch up. Again, it's just so, so demanding of a position mentally and physically. That's why you see a lot of catchers kind of flame out in the upper levels. And when you have one that's special, it's pretty rare. And Herrera, by all accounts and purposes, should be able to push through and should be able to become a valuable catcher on both sides of the ball, not, you know, one over the other necessarily. It's just going to take time.
That's Kyle Glazer, national writer for Baseball America and the guy behind the top 30 prospect rankings for the Cardinals. Next up in our conversation, first base, where power starts to arrive and show up. It's just a matter of when the Cardinals will need it with a guy already playing first for a while, because they have Paul Goldschmidt there. He's currently in the first year of a 5-year extension. It's not like they're really hunting for a first baseman, just like they you know, have an opening at third eventually, they think, for the other guy who could join Goldschmidt in the middle of the lineup. And meanwhile, they have this kind of traffic jam at third that could lead to someone becoming a prospect at first base. And that, from that group stands out Alaris Montero and Malcolm Nunez, two guys who had difficult seasons, coming off of difficult seasons for different reasons. And I wanted to ask you, Kyle, first about Montero. Injury really cut into his season, but he's a young guy, asked to go to AA, and has such a power profile that you think, well, if he gets back, gets healthy, he can get going.
Absolutely. Last year was a lost year in a lot of ways, but it was only a year ago. He was the Midwest League MVP, then went up to the Florida State League and hit well there. And he really didn't get a lot of experience in the Florida State League. A couple people were surprised to see the Cardinals push him to AA in the first place. And the combination of age and really just not being ready for the level, that came back from a lot of scouts. He just looked like he wasn't ready for it. Really led to a lost season. But the skills are still there. You still see a swing. You still see some power potential. He's a big, strong guy. A lot of people felt like he goes back there next year, if it were going to be a normal season at least. It was, you know, potential for a bounce back. Now it might be delayed a little bit, but there's still a lot of believers in the bat and that he could be an impact hitter who hits 280 with 20-plus home runs when all is said and done.
I hear over and over again that he ranks really high as far as power potential. You know, some teams see him as their highest possible score for power potential. When you hear that, do you buy into it?
I wouldn't say it's as high as Nolan Gorman's. I mean, Nolan Gorman is, you know, a 70 on the 20 to 80 scouting scale. Some people go 80. Montero, you're more, get some 55, some 60s, which is above average to plus. So that can be anywhere, depending on a team scale, from 20 to 30 home runs. Maybe it averages out to 25 over the course of his career. But again, hitting, you know, 270, 280 with 20 to 25, maybe 30 home runs a year, that's a really good player.
You mentioned Gorman. Gorman's the priority player at third, which means some of these guys, if the bat advances them to the majors, they're probably going to have to find a new position. And that's why we talk about Nunez and Montero at first base, where the Cardinals also have, you know, Lucan Baker and John Nagowski there on the at AAA. When you think about where they fit positionally, where does Montero and Nunez end up?
So Montero's a bigger guy, and a lot of people don't think third base is where he stays long term. There are some people who think he could end up in the outfield, and there are some big-bodied outfielders out there who can mash and move around okay. But a lot of people think first base might be just more natural for him, just being the corner infielder. You move him over to that side of the diamond. But he's got a great arm, and that's where you say maybe he can end up in the outfield. But we at Baseball America, based on our conversations with scouts outside the Cardinals organization, do project him to first base long term. But you will find some people who say, left field's a possibility.
And Nunez, he overwhelmed, really overpowered the Dominican Summer League. Just a quick thought on him. Young guy, again, maybe not someone who will stay at third, could move to first eventually. I've heard him described as a more well-rounded hitter than Montero, but yet, it's hard to equate the production that he's had with the level just yet.
Yeah, I would actually say Montero is the more natural hitter. Nunez is more just kind of big power. He has some feel to hit, don't get me wrong, but it's more of a if he gets it, it's going to go a long way. But there's a lot of swing and miss there. There's a very raw approach there, which again, he's younger than Montero, so it's natural to assume that. He's a very big boy. There's a lot of sense he's going to have to go to first base, and that's probably going to be the only spot he does play long term. But again, very young. There's a lot of power potential there. We'll see if kind of the natural, feel for hitting comes along in his second year stateside.
That's Kyle Glazer, national writer for Baseball America. And our conversation will continue with a step towards the middle of the diamond. Kyle, this is really the first stumbling block for the Cardinals as far as their depth chart. We've talked about outfield, catcher, and first base. And while, there isn't a sure thing like Ivan Herrera at every position, there's at least potential. When we step into second base and look at what the Cardinals have there, it's less certain. You start to consider the shortstops that might move over, the third baseman that might move over. You're talking about guys who really are going to arrive in the majors more for their versatility and their ability to hit than, say, their ability to win the job, like when Colton Wong arrived to handle second base. Mateo
Yeah,
Gil is
so
the guy that we picked, but really, it could be just a pell-mell there, right?
The majority of Major League second basemen, not all, but the majority of them were shortstops at some point in their career, whether it was college, high school, early minors. So it would be sort of a natural transition for one of these Cardinals shortstop prospects to move over. And that's why, in our view, Mateo Gil's the pick. Really good athlete with a lot of advanced instincts. His dad, Benji Gil, played in the majors for a long time as an infielder. Really, really impressive just in terms of his baseball IQ. As an amateur, some scouts weren't sure about the tools. Some were higher on it than others. But once he got into the Cardinals system, he tested really, really well in a lot of their kind of their athleticism measurements. Went out last year and performed very, very well at Johnson City, playing with some, really talented players like John Torres, like Malcolm Nunez. I talked to a couple scouts who said Mateo Gil was the guy they liked the most on that team, and he has potential to come up and be a good, solid contributor for the Cardinals long term.
Do you see him as a shortstop long term or second baseman, or is that really up in the air at this point?
It's something where it's just going to depend on what else is around him. He can play shortstop. Talking to some people out there, he showed the instincts for it. He showed the arm for it. He showed the hands for it. You can absolutely project him to be a shortstop down the road. Would he be an electric gold glove type winning shortstop? Probably not. More of a solid one. And again, depending on who else the Cardinals have on the roster at the time, he might, slide over to second base and be, above average to a plus defender there, which again is a fairly natural progression. But whether it's an everyday second baseman, someone who bounces between second and short, there's a sense he can handle whatever you throw at him.
One of the interesting things that has continued to come up as we've talked about the prospects is the age of these guys. Mateo Gil is 19, Herrera 19, Fletcher, not yet 20, Torres also a young man, Montero, Nunez, all the names that we've discussed, they're either just on the over 20 or still teenagers. Is that a product of, where baseball is as far as how fast players are moving? Or is that something that the Cardinals need to be aware of because it could still be years before these guys arrive, creating kind of a gap on the depth chart?
It's a little bit of both. There's definitely become more of a sink or swim mentality across baseball where, hey, there's these young guys, we're going to push them and, see if they can handle it. And the Cardinals definitely have done that. But the Cardinals have also shown a willingness to readjust. We saw last year they pushed John Torres and Malcolm Nunez up to low class A Peoria. They showed they weren't quite ready, and they moved him back down, which I thought was good, being able to, make that adjustment. Gil's very young. There is a lot of young talent, as you mentioned, in this system. And they're, you know, they're going to tell the Cardinals how fast they're ready to move. And even Dylan Carlson was super young and he got up to AAA. So we'll see what happens, but it's a nice place to be having this well of young talent and knowing not all of them are going to hit, but if some of them hit, you're in good shape.
That will move us around the horn to the hot corner. And there's really no surprise who we're going to talk about there. We've worked our way around the horn to arrive at, well, probably one of the most obvious answers in this whole series is who is the third baseman of the future for the Cardinals. Cardinals hope, Cardinals think, and a lot of baseball thinks it's going to be Nolan Gorman, the first round pick from a few years ago. Now, what's next for Gorman as he kind of really makes probably the first big step towards the majors by getting to AA?
The biggest thing is just consistency of his approach and his swing. Nolan Gorman got off to a really, really fast start in his pro career. We saw what he did in rookie ball. Then last year to open up in the Midwest League was tearing the cover off the ball. Then some pitchers started to make some adjustments, and the Cardinals moved him out to Palm Beach and the High A Florida State League. And the numbers really went down. Didn't produce anywhere near the power production he did before. And talking to some evaluators, they mentioned it's still in there, but he kind of fell into the trying to hit home runs, you know, opening up a little bit, you know, trying to muscle some balls out. When he's so naturally big and strong, he doesn't have to try. If he just kind of stays, you know, through the ball, keeps it an easy swing, he's going to develop plenty of power. And they felt it was more approach-based. They see all the tools for him to hit 250, 260, and, you know, put up some gaudy power numbers, whether that's 30 home runs, 40 home runs a year. And that'll just come with time and maturity. But that would be the biggest thing to watch for him this year if it was a normal year, is just that consistency of his approach, keeping that front shoulder in and realizing he doesn't have to try and hit home runs. He can just power them out naturally.
We all talk about the risk inherent in drafting a high school pitcher. And then we also talk about the patience needed when drafting like a high school athlete who maybe has to learn more about baseball. Where does a high school power hitter fit into that as far as being able to project, as far as being a risk-reward pick?
So generally speaking, the power comes last. So most of the successful high school hitters, it's their hitters first, and then the power develops a little later. But there are examples of guys who are more power over hit, having some success in the majors. And that's where it really is just a case-by-case basis. When you look at Nolan Gorman, again, the adjustments all young players make are what is going to key their rise to the big leagues. And, you know, he's no different. There's a little bit of an inverted profile in the sense of, again, most of the time for high school hitters, it's hit first, power later. He's more power over hit. When I say that, more home runs over average. But there's enough ability there for him to hit for average, and he shows you the flashes of doing it to not be overly concerned.
He is a legit prospect and has both the production and the profile to prove it. And still, I think this past spring when he was a non-roster invitee to Major League Camp, he, to me, looked like one of the most improved hitters from last year to this year. Just a lot more comfortable in the box, seemed to have more balance. He worked a lot. He went to Driveline this winter, did some work there with his swing. Just seemed more at ease. Now, maybe that's confidence. Maybe that's partially mechanics. It does seem that he's growing into his frame a little bit. But there was also the element of being more comfortable in the field. Where, for you, does he fit long term? Is it possible he sticks at third base, or is he a guy who's going to gravitate towards first?
He can absolutely stay at third base. He's, you know, got good instincts. He's a bigger, stronger guy, but he plays the position well. He's got the glove. He's got the hands. There was, you know, sometimes, okay, there's things to work on, your first step quickness, but he makes the plays he's supposed to. He's continuing to grow. He should have no problem staying at third base long term.
I hesitate to discuss comps because I think sometimes they're unfair. But I've heard a few. I mean, you hear about these power-hitting third basemen. You could go back to, like, Russell Branyon, right, as a prospect. One name came up recently. The guy compared Nolan Gorman to David Wright, just as far as body type at that position. Maybe not as good or not as high ceiling defensively, but maybe that there was a more sort of balanced hitter in Gorman than just the power that gets everybody's attention.
I think there is definitely more of a balanced hitter in Gorman. Like, he's not Joey Gallo, who, you know, up until last year was hitting 200 with 30 to 40 bombs a year. Gorman's better than that. I hesitate to go David Wright because David Wright in his best years was, you know, 280, 290, 300. And, oh, by the way, You know, and oh, by the way, he stole 30 bases a year at some point. So, I mean, I personally hesitate to go there, but I understand the sentiment of, look, this isn't a Joey Gallo, you know, again, prior to last year, Joey Gallo guy who's just, or Russell Brandon even, who, you know, hit 30 home runs, but also hit 190 some years. It's not like that. Gorman can hit for power. You know, find your favorite third baseman that's in that 250, 260, 30 to 40 home run range, and you have yourself an all-star caliber player, and that's what Gorman has a chance to be.
We'll continue our conversation about the prospects on the horizon and what a future lineup might look like for the Cardinals by moving just to our left to shortstop, where, well, I'll just put it this way, the Cardinals are glad that they have a long-term contract with Paul DeJong at this point, because some of their picks, some of their signings, some of their hopes for this position have not really worked out. They've all kind of stalled, and that's shortstop, where not too long ago the Cardinals used their first-round pick to get Delvin Perez out of Puerto Rico, a young guy who they thought they rarely would have a crack at. May have been a top 10 pick, right, if not for a positive drug test, right? Is that possible?
Yeah, Delvin Perez was certainly in the conversation as a potential top 10 overall pick in the 2016 draft, but he tested positive for PEDs shortly before the draft, and that dropped him into the 20s, and that's why he was available, and the Cardinals decided to take that chance.
How patient should they be with him? You know, it's been going on 4 years since the draft. He is really still trying to find a foothold at a full-season club. Spent all of last year at low-A Peoria, got tons of at-bats. But, you know, there are a lot of varying opinions on how he did at that level.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing to keep in mind is he's still very young. Even though he's been around for a while, he was a young draft. I believe he's still 20 years old. So you never want to totally give up on a 20-year-old. The biggest issue with Perez is really since that positive PED test, he has not had any ability to hold weight, hold strength. A lot of evaluators, you know, talk about him. They say things like, you know, he's a Q-tip. As an example, just how skinny he is. He's very, very thin. And because of that, there's not really any ability to impact the baseball. He's a fine athlete. He can play shortstop. He's got a good arm. He can run. There's things to like, but at the end of the day, the number one determining factor, what separates the big leaguers from not big leaguers, is can you impact the baseball and do so consistently? To this point in his career, no one has seen Delvin Perez do that to the level they feel confident in him becoming, more than, you know, really becoming a major leaguer. The Cardinals internally obviously have more hope as they would for any of their first round picks. But even they acknowledge that that's rooted in the belief that he might add enough strength down the road. As of right now, what he's shown to this point, it hasn't been there. So it really just depends on how optimistic you are, whether he can do so in the future.
I think the game has changed in such a way that there really is a clock now on him, in the sense that, like, look, if he's an elite defensive player, and he is, I mean, there's every indication that he can handle the speed of the game at shortstop, at higher levels. He's got a good arm, good athleticism. I mean, you go out and you watch him, and he's this wiry athlete who can really pick the ball. But, you know, there's a short window for where he's going to be peak defense in at his age. And if the bat doesn't catch up, then where does he fit in? You don't see the glove specialists in the majors too much anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe with the addition of the extra roster spot, that changes over time, but you're right. You think about what some of the middle infielders looked like in the 70s and 80s, the all glove, no hit types. You know, maybe that's an era where a player like a Delvin Perez, you could still see, you know, hey, maybe this is a long-term future here, especially playing on the old AstroTurf where the ball's really moving. But you're right. We've seen the game move now toward shortstops who, you know, have power and hit for average. And even if maybe they're not as twitchy as they were before, they play back and let their arms really do the work for them. Again, it's really just going to come down to Delvin Perez's bat and if he can add strength and hold that strength and start impacting the baseball.
How big a deal is it for the Cardinals that they don't have much depth in the middle of the infield? You know, we talk about the outfield depth they have. We'll eventually discuss the starters that they have. You know, the Cardinals, they have talent coming in key spots, just really have this opening, this blank spot in the middle infield, created partially because Perez hasn't developed as needed, but also because of, you know, they haven't been able to draft some of the higher profile guys, or haven't been able to sign because they've been in the penalty box, some of the higher profile middle infielders. Is this an issue for them? Is it going to arrive as a problem?
I don't think it's an issue because they've graduated other really good middle infielders recently. You mentioned Paul DeJong at shortstop. He's set to be their shortstop for the long term. And Tommy Edman obviously played more of a utility role last year, but he's a natural middle infielder who's a shortstop at Stanford. You can really project him out to be the long-term second baseman after Colton Wong leaves. So you've got those two. We mentioned Mateo Gil as another, current shortstop who could probably play both spots as well. They're in an okay spot. It'd be one thing if both of their starting middle infielders were in their 30s at the tail end of their careers. But you look at what they have in the majors with DeJong and Edman long term, assuming Colton Wong leaves in free agency when his time is up. They should be okay, and that will allow Delvin Perez more time to maybe add the strength needed, and they don't need to rush him.
We've been discussing Cardinal prospects, part of an 8-part series in the pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and here at STLtoday.com, looking at what a future lineup might be. We've worked our way all around the horn, all through all the position players, so that means we got two stops left, both of them discussing pitchers. We'll start with closer. When it comes to high-leverage relievers, Kyle, it really is a case of their starters to get innings, to get experience, to sort of add to their pitching and their control and just, to get the seasoning needed. So a lot of them spend that time as starters early, and then they inevitably arrive as relievers in the majors, and some of them stick there. Some of them, even if they have that third pitch or have that look of a starter, like, say, a Trevor Rosenthal, they just remain in relief. And that's one of the reasons why we chose Johan Oviedo as the likely closer in waiting from the minor league system. Where do the Cardinals stack up as far as depth to choose from for high leverage relievers?
They're in a really good spot. I mean, you look at even just some of the guys they have in the majors, Jordan Hicks, Ryan Helsley, Genesis Cabrera, all made their major league debuts in the last 2 years, all starters as well who project in relief long term. They're in good shape there. Oviedo, and there's some other guys like Cody Whitley really stepped up last year. The Cardinals have a lot of hard-throwing pitchers that they can rely on, and if Alex Reyes can ever stay healthy, and maybe he ends up in relief as well. So the Cardinals are in a good spot in terms of high-octane, potential high-leverage relief arms.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention one of the guys who was most impressive this spring in Junior Fernandez, who has he pitches backwards, looks a little different, has really a fierce slider, nice little breaking ball there, and still the horsepower to come back with the fastball, but he offers just a different look. Oviedo came into spring and also turned heads with how he appeared. He slimmed down, looked, he'd already had, always had that big build, talked about changing his diet, talked about kind of working on different, workout regimens. He also really, he Velcroed himself to veterans, whether it was other pitchers like Adam Wainwright or even going out to watch the middle infielders work through their progressions and talking with Jose Oquendo. Where does Oviedo fit on the sort of spectrum of potential starter versus reliever?
Sure. So when they signed him out of Cuba, he was just this big, long-limbed guy, 6'6". And you mentioned, eating better and getting in better shape. It's a big adjustment going from Cuba to the United States. There's just so many social and cultural adjustments, and it took some time for him to get that. But you've seen him take a jump every year just in terms of the coordination, his delivery. He's really growing into his body. He's getting stronger. It's been a consistent upward trend with him. And because of that, there is a sense that he could start just again. You see the delivery, the consistency, having a real feel for his body continue to improve. But you look at most of the high leverage relievers in the majors, and as you mentioned, they were starters at one point in the minors, most of them. And you look at just kind of his statistical profile of big guy, throws hard, ERA is okay, not great. It's a lot of strikeouts, but also a lot of walks. Those guys most often do end up in relief, and a lot of times eighth or ninth inning relief. So I think when you look at all the potential players in the Cardinals system who have yet to make their major league debut, he is the most obvious candidate. But I wouldn't give up on him starting it. I think there is a chance, even if relief is probably the more likely outcome.
One of the things that is really great to read in the prospect handbook is the best tools aspect. And you talk about like best arm, best, defensive catcher, best, we talked about John Torres, who has the best outfield arm. What fastballs stood out? What fastballs did you hear a lot about as far as the top fastballs in the organization? Because obviously Hicks is king, but who's next?
So Helsley and Cabrera, they're still prospect eligible for us, even though they reached the majors last year. Those are really the top two guys, just in terms of the sheer velocity they can bring is really something. But Oviedo's got a good fastball too. You know, he's got some extension from those, you know, big long limbs of his. He can get it up into the mid to upper 90s. He's continuing to grow. And, you know, his was in consideration, but Helsley and Cabrera's right now, those were the two fastballs that were pretty consistently coming back as the best ones.
Do you see any other closer candidates? You know, Rondon was the team's pitcher of the year this past year, strike thrower, relentless. Whitley is even more so, lots of command. Has the look of a guy who could be a fireman, though with increased velocity, a little bit like Seth Maness was or Brad Thompson was years ago, but just has a higher tick as far as velocity goes. Do you see any other closer candidates from that group? I mean, Helsley probably stands out.
Yeah, I think Angel Rondon and Cody Whitley, who are really good pitchers, probably are more in the mid to late relief bucket. You know, Connor Jones has that bowling ball sinker. Maybe he ends up, you know, kind of that early to mid relief, mid to late relief group as well. I would say Helsley and Cabrera are the two that really stand out as the closer candidates, with Oviedo being the guy who has yet to touch the majors you can probably point to.
Left-right closer candidates, that's not bad when you talk about Helsley and Cabrera.
Not at all. And if Jordan Hicks comes back from his Tommy John surgery, I mean, again, the job is going to be his to lose, and I think he'll keep it. But when you have potentially three or four relievers to back your bullpen who could potentially close for other teams, you're in really good shape.
We're here on the last stop of our conversation, and it's one where really the Cardinals have stood out over time in their development of starting pitchers. They have populated other rotations. I think not too long ago, half the pitching staff in the Mariners had Cardinals ties. They weren't all homegrown Cardinals, but they all had cycled through here at some point in time, or cycled through St. Louis at some point in time. Kyle, why do you think the Cardinals have been successful? Is it partially because of how they scout? Is it how they develop? Is it where they're picking the draft that there are college pitchers available?
It's a combination of everything. The Cardinals have long had, you know, one of the best scouting operations in baseball, and their player development system, you know, I would say is second only to the Dodgers just in terms of how good it is. And you can make the argument that it's tied with the Dodgers for the best in baseball. You mentioned pitchers populating other rotations, you know, Sandy Alcantara, Zach Galen, Marco Gonzalez. All these guys are really, really good for other teams right now. And the Cardinals, you know, traded them to get some impact position players, and they still have a good rotation with Jack Flaherty and Dakota Hudson, homegrown guys left over. So, yeah, when it comes to developing pitchers, the Cardinals have long been near the top of the list in terms of teams able to do it, and they've got plenty of options to continue that reputation, I should say, coming up.
The starters who we fixated on for the purpose of this story, the two guys who look poised to join the rotation and be long-term parts of it, also represent something that has been missing from the Cardinals organization really since they traded Marco Gonzalez for Tyler O'Neill. They have tried to accumulate lefties since. Yenesis Cabrera, currently a reliever, could be a starter. He was one of that group that they traded for. Then there was the draft of Zach Thompson, who seems to be on the brink of the majors, just like Waka and Gonzalez before him. And then, of course, the trade with Tampa Bay, where they sent Jose Martinez and Randy Arozarena to get Matthew Liberatore, who is a high-ceiling lefty. And when you think about it, putting Thompson and Liberatore in a rotation that has Flaherty and Dakota Hudson, that's a right-left combo that – or not combo, but what? Foursome?
Yeah.
I'm searching for the word. A right-left foursome that few teams could match, really. Do you think that that's the future for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I mean, Thompson and Liberatore are their top two starting pitching, you know, prospects. There's no question about it. As I was doing the top 30, you know, Cabrera and Helsley ranked pretty high. And the Cardinals were saying they were going to bring them to camp as starters and see what happened. I think most people expect that they will end up in the bullpen when all is said and done. They have a chance to start. But, you know, Liberatore and Thompson, those are the two guys you say these guys are definitely starters. And you mentioned having that left-handed starter slim the Cardinals have not really had in a lot of ways since Jaime Garcia left. And this has a chance to give them two guys that can be impact stars from the left side to pair with, you know, Flaherty, who looks like he's going to win a Cy Young Award someday, and Hudson with his power sinker. It's a lot of different looks. It's a lot of different types of pitchers. it's going to be very, very difficult for an opponent to match up a three-game series with the Cardinals, because you're going to face three arms who are all good and all different.
12 months ago, Zach Thompson was a starter for Kentucky in the SEC. Spring training, he comes in very impressive. It's entirely possible that the season had played out as normal without the indefinite delay to the start of the season, that Thompson would have been in the majors at some point in time, like Waka or like Gonzalez, both of whom made their major league debuts within a year of their draft. What to you stood out about Thompson as you look not just into the draft, but coming out of it when the Cardinals drafted him?
I mean, just the stuff. He broke James Paxton's strikeout record by a left-hander at Kentucky, which tells you, you know, the type of pitcher he could be in terms of the level of his stuff. The biggest thing with him was just always injuries. You know, he had some trouble staying healthy, and that was really the only reason he fell to 17th in the draft where the Cardinals took him. He could have gone, you know, a couple picks higher, no question about it. But you see, you know, fastball, he showed up to 97 when he got out to Palm Beach. Again, those were short stints in relief. He hadn't shown that in a starting role before, but just knowing it's in there from the left side is certainly impressive. The curveball and slider, I believe it was the slider was better than the curveball in college, but he came out and showed the curveball better in pro ball. I think I got that right. It's been a while since I wrote the report, but the point was that, you know, showing that he has two breaking balls, that could be weapons. It's not just one over the other. The fact that one can look better at one point, but one's better at the, you know, in pro ball shows you that, hey, fastball up to 97 with two breaking balls, like, that's really, really, really impressive place to start. Now it's just a matter of showing he can stay healthy, showing he can maintain that stuff over, you know, taking the ball and throwing 5, 6, 7 innings every 5 days, as opposed to last year, just because he pitched so many innings in college. The Cardinals just sent him out in some short stint type of short stints in the Florida State League with Palm Beach.
When the trade happened with Tampa Bay, the top 30 had already debuted. The top 10 had already run in the magazine. So what kind of second rewrite was necessary when the Cardinals acquire Liberatore?
Liberatore became their number two prospect right away behind Dylan Carlson, ahead of Nolan Gorman. He is a premier left-handed high school pitching prospect. You know, you want to know what it looks like when a guy is a high school lefty and they end up being successful in the majors. Watch Matthew Liberatore. It's, you know, really good athlete, four pitches. He has stuff, but he knows how to use it. He's not just chucking it up there. His maturity really, really stands out, and both on the mound and just talking to him in the dugout. He's a really smart pitcher. He knows how to, you know, how to use his stuff. And I think he's going to settle in. A lot of evaluators think at worst he's going to be, you know, a solid mid-rotation guy. And maybe as he continues to grow and get stronger, you could be looking at a, you know, front of the rotation type lefty you can stick in at number two behind Jack Flaherty. Always, you know, the caveats about young pitchers and, you know, health and whether or not they can maintain it, because there's a pretty long track record of promising young pitchers who get sidetracked by injuries. But everything Matthew Liberatore has shown to date is that of a really, really promising left-handed pitcher.
Are both of these lefties high floor, high ceiling guys, Kyle?
You know, I kind of hate that term because people artificially juice the floors a little bit. The floor of any minor league pitcher is they're a minor league pitcher, especially with pitchers where, you know, some, you know, a third pitch doesn't develop as hoped, or we mentioned injuries, you know, elbows and shoulders go. I would say that, you know, Thompson being a college guy, you can see a scenario where, hey, if he's 97 out of the bullpen with at least one good breaking ball, he should be able to help the team at least in a bullpen role. Hopefully, you know, there's more in there as well. Liberatore, it's just tough for me to ever say there's a high floor on a high school pitcher.
Yeah.
Because so many things can go awry. I'll just say that he absolutely has a very high ceiling. And even if he doesn't get that, you can still see him becoming a very good starting pitcher in the major leagues.
Let's close our conversation, this week-long conversation we've had about Cardinals prospects, with this. What's your view of where the system is as a whole? It does seem like there is more impact presence than maybe there has been in a handful of years. Pitching depth has been a constant for them. But, you know, it does look like they may actually – have somewhere in this mix of players we've talked about a guy who, you know, joins Dylan Carlson or joins Nolan Gorman as an impact presence for them down the road. But that doesn't always mean that they're a deep system. What's your view of their system as a whole at this point, Kyle?
Yeah, so there's a lot of talent, double A, triple A, and above. Once you started getting into, high, low A, and the rookie levels, it's much less deep. There's a lot less talent you feel great about. There are some guys, don't get me wrong, we talked about John Torres and Mateo Gil and some of those guys in Johnson City, but it was really easy to put together a top 10 for the Cardinals, a top 15 even. It was a little tougher finding guys at 27, 28, 29, 30. Some of that was because of the draft pick penalties they suffered for Chris Kreitz's hacking scandal, not having a first or second rounder in 2017. Some of their other high picks have not worked out. You mentioned Delvin Perez, but also the Nick Plummers and Bryce Dentons of the world. So it's not as deep as some other Cardinals systems, but you look at the young talent they have in the majors. The other young talented players they've traded to get impact players, getting Paul Goldschmidt, getting Marcell Ozuna, and the fact there is a lot of talent in the upper levels, you still feel good about where the Cardinals are. Again, they reached the NLCS last year. They have a good major league team. There's impact talent on the horizon. They're in a good place. They have time to backfill that system a little bit at the lower levels. I wouldn't panic about it.
That's Kyle Glazer, national writer for Baseball America, and the guy who does the top 30 prospect rankings for Baseball America's prospect handbook when it comes to the Cardinals. We've been talking about the future of the Cardinals lineup all week here at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can find all those stories at stltoday.com. It's been an eight-part series looking position by position by position at where the Cardinals and their minor league depth chart stands and the player that might emerge as the starter of the future at that spot. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me all week. It's been a pleasure to talk baseball. It's been a pleasure to talk prospects with you. And as with everything, there's always the risk of predicting what's coming with a prospect, but I appreciate the depth of knowledge you've shown here. Thank you so much, friend.
My pleasure, Derek. Happy to join you anytime.
Thanks to Kyle Glazer, national writer for Baseball America, for joining me to do that series of videos that could then be repackaged here into the podcast. You can find all eight of the stories, including scouting reports on all of the players discussed, still available at stltoday.com or over the past week in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It was an eight-day series, eight stories, eight different scouting reports, 10 positions covered. The goal was to kind of illustrate the scope of the Cardinals minor league system, not just where they had players like Nolan Gorman or Matthew Liberatore set to arrive, but also where they had some gaps and where the next gulch might come, where that next donut hole might be for them to address, especially as the five-round draft for 2020 approaches here in the coming weeks. You can find that work along with the best podcast in baseball and a whole galaxy of podcasts from my colleagues in the sports department of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch at stltoday.com. You can also find the best podcast in baseball anywhere you get your podcasts, including iTunes, where you can listen to individual episodes, download individual episodes. You know the whole drill. Rate, review, subscribe. If you subscribe, that makes the sponsorships possible. The sponsorship makes the weekly podcast possible. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you again by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Get organized with Closets by Design of St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BYDESIGN. Closets by Design of St. Louis, the sponsor of the best podcast in baseball. And we have a lot to talk about here in the coming weeks as baseball tries to find its legs and come back if they can come to an agreement between the union and the owner. So plenty to talk about. Wanted to offer up this bonus issue. Also a chance to steer people in the direction of the eight-part series in case they missed it. Again, that's all available at stltoday.com. You'll find eight stories looking at 10 positions in the future of the Cardinals. For now, we know it's up. It could change tomorrow. It could change with the draft. It could change with a trade in this offseason. But this is what the future looks like for now. For the best podcast in baseball, I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Eric Gould. Talk to you soon. Stay healthy.